Chapter 2, 8 Mistakes New Bosses Make. To avoid the pitfalls, you must know where the pits are.
On January 1, 1929, not far from where I live, a momentous sporting event took place with a surprising play that would go down in history. The Golden Bears played the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets in the Rose Bowl. Roy Riegels, an All-American for the Bears, picked up a fumble just 30 yards from the Yellow Jackets' end zone. But during the play, Riegels got turned around and began running toward the opponent's goal line. When he was 3 yards from scoring a touchdown for the Yellow Jackets, his own quarterback tackled him. The ball was placed at the 1 yard line. The Bears chose to punt, but it was blocked, leading to a safety and giving Georgia Tech 2 points that allowed them to win 8-7. Wrong Way Riegels went down in infamy as a talented player who bungled a great opportunity. Although they might not be as famous or infamous, countless talented people make a similar mistake as they begin their roles as a boss. Most are intelligent, dedicated employees who demonstrate stellar technical skills. But in the role of boss, they bungle the play and let down their team. Here are 8 of the most common errors new bosses make. The purpose of this list is to pre-warn you about frequent issues. It sets the course for what the rest of the book will strive to remedy, but offers a succinct overview of the most frequent mishaps of new bosses. Number 1, thinking automatic, not manual. If you go into your new role as a boss with a mindset you had in your previous role, you're in for a bumpy road. It's like trying to drive a stick shift, manual, vehicle the way you do an automatic. Typically, people who get promoted to managerial roles have shown expertise in some other area, usually in a more technical and detailed task. Any number of reasons can be behind the promotion, but often what got the person to the role of being in charge won't make him or her good at managing. What got you here won't take you there. This book is about making the paradigm shift from overseeing tasks and projects to overseeing teams and people. If you don't make the shift in your thinking, you'll be far less effective than you've been in the past, disappointing you and the organization you serve. Number 2, confusing power with control. Now that you possess more power, don't try to control too much. Number 2, confusing power with control. Now that you possess power, don't try to control too much. No one enjoys being micromanaged, having the boss staring over them as they work, continually interrupting to correct, reprove, or just observe. So, although people don't like it as a team member, they often do that when they become the team leader. Much of that has to do with failing to change one's mindset. They can't seem to let go of being a doer versus an overseer. Bosses must delegate tasks to team members and empower them. That requires trust. If you don't trust the capabilities of your team members, then, as the boss, you need to make sure they get trained and motivated. This is not accomplished by micromanaging. Let your people do their work. Check in and hold them accountable, but get out of their way. Number 3, confusing being the boss with being bossy. Something very odd happens when you give a person a title as manager, team leader, or shift leader, or boss. Many people think they must become bossy. They begin ordering people around, telling them what to do, and nitpicking over things that would drive them nuts when they were a team member. The main reason for bossy bosses is that this is what they've seen from previous bosses. We pass on the dysfunction from generation to generation of supervisors. 5-star bosses aren't bossy. They don't bark commands to their team members. Rather, they lead by example, encourage, and train. These require more work in the long run, which is another reason people become bossy. Laziness. Number 4. The task isn't your task. Some organizations promote people to full-time managerial roles, while others are in hybrid roles of part-time team member and part-time team leader. Regardless, managers are in charge of people, not just projects. If you become overly task-oriented, your people problems will accumulate. When that happens, task accomplishment slows, and now you're behind in both areas. The task of the leader is the team. The task of the team is the task. Let me say that again, in case it didn't soak in. The task of the leader is the team. The task of the team is the task. Keeping that in mind helps you look up from being a doer to becoming a people mover. When team members feel like they're just parts of a machine that you're running, that they're being used, they'll be less motivated and you'll be less effective in your role. This is counterintuitive to many who were so effective at project completion. Number 5, sophomoric thinking. As a professor, sometimes I like to have fun with my undergrad students. I'll ask, how many of you are freshmen? Then I'll ask, how many of you are sophomores? Do you know the etymology for the word sophomore? It's from two Greek words, sophos, where we get our word sophisticated, and moros, where we get our word for moron. So literally, a sophomore is a sophisticated moron. Insert awkward language. It makes sense because we know freshmen are morons, right? Meaning they don't know a lot, but after a year, students begin thinking that they know more than they really do. So a second-year student often looks down at their immature counterparts, only a year their junior. So while they're more sophisticated than they used to be, they still don't know a lot. So what's my point? Well, a common feeling among newer and sometimes older bosses is that they are expected to be the smartest person in the room. Henry Ford said that he hired people smarter than him. Don't assume that you should know how to do everything. If you don't feel comfortable going to your supervisor for ideas, then find a colleague, a friend with managerial experience, or someone in your company you can trust who is wise and experienced. People who try to act smart but don't learn end up losing credibility and thus diminishing their influence. Later in the book, we'll talk more about finding a mentor, but advice seeking is more about specifics. It could be asking about a policy or protocol and politics. When you're a new boss, you're like the new kid at school. It may feel embarrassing to ask the newbie questions, like how do I log into the copy machine or fill out a purchase order or submit a credit card receipt? But don't apologize. Ask what you need to know and quickly identify who your go-to person is for need-to-know information. This, too, is a good issue to ask about. Try to avoid sophomoric thinking. Number 6, tripping up the stairs. Most managers are sandwiched between having a boss and being a boss. That's a precarious position. Your effectiveness is based on your ability to lead your team as well as help your supervisor be more productive. If you don't understand your boss's communication style, priorities, and what his or her supervisor's goals are, then you're going to stumble in meeting expectations. That's what I call tripping up the stairs. Later on, we'll talk about 360-degree leading, up, down, and laterally. But for now, know that for you to be a good boss, you need to have your boss's back. To better understand how he or she thinks, ask others who report to your boss about what's important to that person and even about little things like pet peeves. Figure out how he or she is wired and do your best to sincerely serve without appearing to brown nose, kiss up, suck up, you know the terms. Only weak ego people appreciate such behavior, and if your boss is wired that way, you're going to have many other issues to deal with. Number 7, the mirror syndrome. Remember the evil queen in Snow White? Mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the fairest of them all? The insecure power wielder depended on that insecure power wielder depended on something else for her strokes. She needed to be liked. Well, that's a temptation for leaders too, because hey, we're human. If you're managing a team different from the other, one you used to be on, it will be easier than trying to be in charge of people who were If you're managing a team different from the one you used to be on, it will be easier than trying to be in charge of people who were colleagues and even friends. If you do end up managing your previous team, it may be best to have one-on-one, honest discussions with how... If you do end up managing your previous team, it may be best to have one-on-one, honest discussions with how appreciative you are to have them in the... If you do end up managing your previous team, it may be best to have one-on-one, honest discussions with how appreciative you are to have the new role and how awkward it feels to be in charge. Depending on the situation, there may be some feelings of jealousy that they didn't get selected, or even disrespect that now you're one of them. You may need to draw some lines in the sand and establish boundaries while still maintaining a humble attitude. We'll talk more about the challenges of hitting the right balance of moving from buddy to boss a little later on. 8. B-I-Z-A-U. BizAU. I enjoy trying to figure out personalized license plates. Some people get very creative and others simply create private acronyms. A lot of new bosses drive around with BIZAU on their vehicles. That means business as usual. When you're new, you have a fine line to walk. You don't want to come in like a raging bull, turning things over and making a lot of changes. And yet, a more typical misstep is doing little to nothing differently. Being new offers a unique opportunity to make some changes that people will allow because she doesn't know any better. This is what we call short-term credit. Leaders typically must earn the right to make changes, but new bosses can take advantage of this new phase. If you don't do anything new, people are going to assume that you're a status quo manager, and any change you attempt in the future will be more difficult. Understand this primarily pertains to your area of responsibility. If you begin speaking up in meetings with your boss or colleagues and start making suggestions from your previous job, you'll irritate others. Take a while in these settings to listen, build rapport, and get a lay of the land so that you don't sound naive. Understanding context is important for new bosses. It helps you learn where the landmines are hidden and how to avoid stepping on them. Figure out small things you can do initially to make a few changes, testing to see how open others are to change. You want others to see that this won't be business as usual. Now, this list of 8 varies from boss to boss, but these items tend to be the ones you hear a lot about, both from supervisors as well as team members. Having them on your radar is important because you want to be the best. Having them on your radar is important because you want to be self-aware in your new role without becoming paranoid. The rest of the book will touch on all of these issues in more detail and how to avoid them, along with several other best practice themes. All right, let's end this chapter with some more 5-star boss questions. Number 1, what other items would you add to this list that you've experienced in observing new bosses? Number 2, of this list, which would seem to be the top 3 that you're more vulnerable to and or likely to commit? Number 3, what are a few things you could do to be more diligent in avoiding these missteps? Number 3, what are a few things you could do to be more diligent in avoiding these missteps? Number 4, of this list, which 2 would seem to be at the bottom of your list, based on what you know about yourself and the context of your role? And number 5, what is one thing you know you don't know that you want to learn about?
Chapter 2, 8 Mistakes New Bosses Make. To avoid the pitfalls, you must know where the pits are.